Every day at Sierra, you'll find top brand apparel, footwear, and gear for 20 to 60% less than department and specialty store prices. And during clearance time at Sierra, those incredible prices are 40 divided by 2.5, carry the one, even lower. And when you shop clearance at Sierra, you can save a whole lot more on everything you need to get active and outside. That's a lot of saving. Epic brands, vast selection, teeny tiny prices. That's Sierra. Visit your local Sierra store today or shop online at sierra.com.
What an incredible weekend of college football. Friday and Saturday, we knew the matchups were going to be outstanding. We hoped the games were going to deliver. And for the most part, you bet your bottom dollar they delivered. It was absolutely outstanding football, wall to wall, all day for the last 2 days. David Cone, former Michigan quarterback, joins me as usual. So does my brother, former Western State Colorado wide receiver, Blaine Crane. This is Crane & Company. If you're just now finding out about us and you're a college football fan, a sports fan in general, well, welcome home. Welcome to the Trust.
Cone, we got to get your name in there.
You talking about Coney?
We got to get Coney.
I just handwrite N-E at the end.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. Crane and Cone.
Just
and
change company. The, yeah, yeah. Just actually, you really just have to take out the last arch in the M in company, and it really just makes it Cone-pany.
I had called my guy to change my name to company. Let me change.
Oh, okay. That's actually smarter. That's actually smarter. Blaine Crane, former Western State Colorado wide receiver as well. Guys, if you're just now logging on, we have a full Alabama, Georgia, and Auburn A&M recap and reaction that we already did, that we put out last night. So we're going to dive into it a little bit at the end, you know, after having a night to sleep on it. Did anything change in our mind? But we have a full in-depth review of what happened last night, Alabama, Georgia, Auburn, Texas A&M. So don't freak out if we don't mention those games off the top. It's not like we forgot or we're not going to talk about them. Blaine, stop freaking out.
I'm leaving.
Sunday, the Lord's Day, grow up. But we'll get to that later. I want to start off with one, though. I know a lot of people are starting off Oregon, Penn State. We're going to get to that. There's a bunch of big games, but Ole Miss. And we talked all week. All of a sudden, Whit Weeks is Dayton Lane Kiffin's daughter, the linebacker at LSU. She's obviously the head coach at Ole Miss's daughter. So that was an interesting dynamic. And some people out there, including friends, thought some of us were crazy for picking Ole Miss. And I get it. It's all in good fun. But that's why you don't underestimate the Lane train. And what Ole Miss did, especially in the second half, really from the second quarter on defensively against LSU, I know, you know, people think Nussmeier's hurt. I get it. You know, he's looked hurt. But, David, I just want to start with you. It was a hell of a football game. It came down to the end. But here we sit after LSU beat Clemson. A lot of people are like, pencil them in. They're going to be the best team in the SEC. Ole Miss is now 5-0 and 3-0 in the SEC. How good is this Ole Miss team overall? Mm-hmm. I'm talking not just SEC, but nationally, David. How good are they?
Everyone I watched this weekend, I asked that question. Is anyone good? Like, is there a really good football team? But I'll tell you what, this was a really good football game, and congratulations to Lane Kiffin. I felt really good about taking LSU all week until that news broke about his daughter. And then as the father of two daughters, I flipped my pick, and I'm glad that I did, because after that, it was a wrap for me. Like, daddy's got to go show out. The biggest takeaway for me was LSU's rushing attack. And look, first off, kudos to Ole Miss's rush defense for figuring out a way to stop that. All the credit goes to them. And I also understand there's a couple other things. You didn't have Caden Durham as your running back for LSU. I know that hurts. And the other thing that I want to get out of the way here at the front end is I know that a lot of this in this RPO era, a lot of this is read-based. So Nussmeier is doing simple math equations and sometimes kicking bubble screens where those would otherwise be handoffs and those could technically be the correct read. But you know what? Maybe that's the problem. Maybe sometimes these teams need to get in 12 and 13 personnel or 22 and 23 personnel and just run it down someone's throat. Because I'm watching LSU at one point in the third quarter, I looked up 11 carries for 21 yards against a rush defense that hasn't allowed fewer than 170 on the ground yet this year. Run it down their throat, especially if there's any concern that Garrett Nussmeier is injured, which, injured or not, that doesn't make up for you throwing the football into double coverage or triple coverage and continuing to do what I've seen him do, which is put the football in harm's way. But the biggest thing for me, like I said, is LSU, you ran for 59 yards. on a defense that hasn't given up fewer than 170, I would have just made it a priority to run it down Ole Miss's throat. And look, Ole Miss made it a priority to not let you, so kudos to them.
Yeah, and it's funny, you look at irony. You talk about Ole Miss hasn't, you know, allowed fewer than 170 yards rushing. Well, Ole Miss as a team against an LSU defense that we know is talented, we've watched them play, they ran for exactly 170 yards. Blaine, obviously me and you were sitting in the living room staring at the four box watching this one as well. I want to make sure and give Ole Miss credit. I thought Trinidad Chambliss did what he had to do. 23 of 39, over 300 yards in the air against this defense, a touchdown, an interception. He also ran for 71 yards. Ole Miss was able to rush for two touchdowns. I like the way he spread out the receivers. A bunch of different guys caught balls. You know, Caden Lee had four. Daquan Wright had four catches. Deuce Alexander had three catches. Winston Watkins with three catches. Caleb Odom with two. Kawan Lacey with three. You had Harrison Wallace dribbling with two. And Logan Diggs all had a catch. So it was dispersed around pretty well. But when you look at LSU, this offense, Blaine, that was the scary part for LSU fans when they were asking the question, how can our team be elite? Is this a national championship team? Is this a team that's just going to play really good complementary football against an Ole Miss defense that we know has some good personnel but isn't exactly elite? What is the worry level if you're an LSU fan now, after watching Nuss make some of those similar mistakes that he's made the past couple of years, turning the ball over when you're getting those mixed coverages and those bracketed coverages, how should LSU fans feel right now?
Well, you should be worried. The worry level should be pretty high, and I'll tell you why. I think Pete Golden whooped Joe Sloan's ass for four quarters.
Yeah,
he did.
From a play-calling standpoint, the tendencies for LSU were just out of this world. They're running it on first down, okay? Everybody, I knew that. Pete Golden knew that. Everybody in the world knew that. And then I think Ole Miss did a phenomenal job, especially in later downs, just bringing three. And they were getting home with three, which is insane to say. We're getting into the boat now where LSU fans just wonder, with Brian Kelly under the helm, why can't we have a complete team, right? And I thought this was the year LSU had a complete team. Something's wrong with Nussmeier, okay? Something is wrong. I don't know what it is, but you just don't fall off a cliff. Him and Cade Klubnik. And on the Cade Klubnik side, I can understand because he doesn't have as many skill position players as LSU has running around receiver. I mean, Aaron Anderson, Xavier Thomas, the guys that they have running around, the points should be put up, right? I would have never thought walking into halftime. What was the halftime score of this game? 7-3?
Yeah, it was
17-7.
There is no excuse.
Yeah.
There is no excuse for an LSU offense with the talent that they have to not put up numbers against a mediocre Ole Miss defense.
Well, and you jumped out to a lead if you're LSU. Like, sure, you can call it fluke, whatever. You still had a 7-point lead on the road. And God, I mean, you weren't able to put more points on the board until the second half. I mean, you know, David, again, is there something schematically? I think LSU runs some pretty decent stuff. But to Blaine's point, when you're so predictable and the defensive coordinator can see the future because, again, you think you're in a rhythm as a play caller, but your tendencies are through the roof. I mean, at some point, you've got to try and pitch backwards a little bit, right? You've got to try and mix it up and go against Tennessee a little bit because we're in week five. The report that gets printed out each week matters now. Like, there's enough data to say – he likes this from the left hash out of this formation at this time, this, that, blah, 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 blah. I mean, is it as simple as LSU is too predictable, or do you see something within the scheme or Nussmeier's health that is causing this?
Well, again, getting back to the scheme, yeah, I mean, at some point I would have lined up in heavy personnel and been like, we're going to run it down the throat of a team that has had it run down their throats. We're not going to rush for 60 yards in this game. So if you want to call that scheme or will or whatever, I know it's got to be frustrating for LSU fans to see a complete inversion of team strengths, a little bit what Blaine was talking about, to say, finally, we have balance – and we have our returning our quarterback returning, but then that's the weakness of the team this year. And again, there's so much to like about this LSU defense, man. They fly around, they do a lot of great things. That's going to keep them in contention. That's going to keep them in ball games. They're going to lean on that defense. I still think they have a really good football team. I thought the question to Brian Kelly a few weeks ago about their offense was fair, and to be honest, I thought his response was fair too when he said, "Hey, stop it. We did what it took to win the game. We're not here trying to put up the most points. We're not here trying to have the sexiest offense. We're still undefeated." But now you sit here on this Sunday morning and you're no longer undefeated, and a large part of it is the fault of the offense. And what's got to be even more frustrating is that you won some key battles. I mean, you won the turnover battle. Ole Miss turned it over more. Yeah. You won the penalty battle. Ole Miss had 14 penalties to your 7 penalties. It's not like you got beat by a Lane Kiffin coach team who just played a perfect game. There was some serious out coaching here. I mean, great plan for Harold Perkins. When to chip him, when to make him the read, hitting Deuce Alexander on one and ones, audibling into that. Mm-hmm. You know, Ole Miss catching the rush touchdown against LSU with a run stunt that they had on. You can say they lucked into that, but then again, that could be something that Lane Kiffin saw and took advantage of. So great coaching by Lane and his staff.
Ole Miss deserves all the credit in the world. And speaking of Ole Miss, before we move on here, and again, in the comments, let us know what you think. If you're an LSU fan or you want to opine on LSU, how do they fix it? And how good is this Ole Miss team? Because, guys, I'm looking at their schedule. You got Washington State next. You actually got a bye week before that. So, you know, not only was that a huge win, you now have a week to rest. You got Washington State coming to your house. You'll kill them. Then you go to Georgia and to Oklahoma. If you're Ole Miss and you can split that, which I know is asking a lot, and we'll see how Mateer is, right? Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. You go to Georgia, you go to Oklahoma, you split that, you finish with South Carolina at home, Citadel at home, Florida at home, and at Mississippi State, which means you win out, you're 11-1, and you are probably most likely playing, outside of a tiebreaker, in an SEC championship game, which, to me, with this Ole Miss team, when Jackson Dart's Ole Miss team was supposed to be the team last year, right? Remember, that was supposed to be the team. All of a sudden, you come into this season, you're like, well, it's going to be kind of a rebuilding year a little bit for Ole Miss. Austin Simmons, a young guy that's going to be good. Your backup quarterback right now could be the one that leads you to this promised land you thought these other high-name guys were going to take you to. It just shows you how crazy
it's easy to get up for LSU, and it's easy to get up for a team whose starting linebacker is dating your daughter. This is the Lane Kiffin question, and really like the Ole Miss writ large question is, can you get up for some of those other teams you mentioned, or do you find yourself losing to Kentucky at home like they did a year ago?
Yeah, especially in a year where you feel like there's really not a bottom of the league. Like there's not a – none of those are just walk-through.
Look at Mississippi State.
I know.
Mississippi State yesterday.
Should be ranked. Look, Jeff Lebby's doing a hell of a job. Yeah. But on the other side, if you're LSU, right, you've lost to Ole Miss. All right, your first loss of the year. You get South Carolina at home, not easy. At Vandy, A&M at home, at Bama, Arkansas, Western Kentucky home, and then at Oklahoma. I mean, it doesn't get a whole lot easier, you know, outside of Western Kentucky. These next 3 weeks, obviously every week is big, Blaine. But for LSU, I don't think 9-3 is getting you in. I don't think it's getting you in. But, you know, we'll see. You know, you go 10-2, you're definitely going
to
be in.
Well, we go back to the age-old question that we ask every single year with the LSU, and it feels like every single other week that we ask, bless you, can Brian Kelly get it done in LSU? Right? With this team, with this roster, with the defense that Blake Baker had. If you think LSU played bad on defense against Ole Miss, then I'm sorry, you're an idiot.
Yeah, I agree.
You are, because they didn't. The fact that Ole Miss, a team that runs a hurry-up offense, had more time of possession than LSU is clinically insane. That defense was on the field for four quarters, and gave up 7 points in the second half. So Brian Kelly, with one of the only experienced quarterbacks returning in college football, Blake Baker figuring out a defense, you have a phenomenal back and great receivers, and you find a way to lose to Ole Miss at Ole Miss, I promise you, LSU fans are going to be asking a lot of questions. But if you're LSU, you have everything in front of you.
Yep. Still control your own destiny.
You can get this done. So the panic level shouldn't be that high, but something has to be figured out with Nussmeier. There's no way you throw for 4,000 yards last year, then coming in this year and you turn into Drew Barrymore from 51st Dates and just forget.
Well, and I do. Again, let's move on. I don't want to spend too much time on it. But, something I said in the offseason, and I'm not knocking somebody for throwing for 4,000 yards, but you want to know really the main reason how you get to 4,000 yards is because you have to throw it a lot. Mm-hmm. Either that's by design or that's all you got offensively, right? And I wonder if LSU, again, I would much rather have a quarterback that threw for 3,200 yards or 3,500 yards and we had a damn good run game or really bounced on offense than like you saw last year. And now you kind of saw in the last game where it's like, oh no, we just basically got to turn into an air raid team because we can't run the ball. And the offense that they have is not designed to live that way, right? You don't have a guy like Jaden Daniels that can just take off at any point in time and there's a built-in run game everywhere. So, yeah, you want a bunch of yards, that's great. But there's a reason you get to 4,000 and a lot of people don't. So I just want to make sure that point comes across. But also, Alabama, Georgia, we had a full review already on that one, a reaction to it. Auburn, Texas A&M, too. Going to talk about them here in a little bit, but make sure if you haven't, you go check those out. Did them right after the game. A lot of fun, a lot of emotion. That's the best time to do it. But speaking of a lot of emotion, Penn State, wide out. If you hosted if you had color night, whatever it is, at your stadium, whether it's a whiteout or a blackout, wasn't good for you last night.
No.
Wasn't good for you. Penn State with the whiteout and ended up getting wiped out by Dan Lanning and the Oregon Ducks with a massive dub. Massive dub going into Happy Valley, giving Penn State their first loss. Penn State now 0-1 in the Big Ten. Oregon 5-0, 2-0. Passed their first test. David, I know your answer to this, so I'm going to go to Blaine first. Blaine, with what you saw yesterday, and I want to make sure we give credit to Dan Lanning and Oregon and all this, but I'm going to be honest with you, man. It was 3-3 at halftime, and you can call it great defense. It was not pretty last night at all. How good are these two teams in nationally? Where do you put them right now?
Well, I think, Oregon's, I've said this for a while now, I think Oregon's a top three team in the country. And they proved it to me in this game. The big worry I had coming in this game for Oregon was, could you stop a team that runs it right at you?
Yeah.
Could you stop a team that gets downhill at you extremely quickly? Because to be honest with you, Northwestern did that. If you will go back some of their past games, they did that. And Dan Lanning and these guys stepped up to the plate and had their best defensive outing since I've seen a Dan Lanning playing a team like this since he's been in Oregon. On the other side of Penn State, I'm not surprised. I think Drew Aller is a mediocre quarterback. I think he's been gassed up from having a phenomenal roster around him on both sides of the ball. I think James Franklin has a degree in winning, not being able to win a huge game. And you saw that here. I don't know what else has to line up for Penn State. I mean, wide out, at night, experienced quarterback, two of the best backs in the nation. They always have games on defense, and they find a way to lose it. And I think one of the reasons is because Dante Moore is that damn good. He is that damn good to me. From a kid whose first legitimate road start at a wideout at Penn State didn't miss a beat. Extending plays, throwing huge passes down the field. Hell, how many times did Oregon go for it on fourth down? Dan Lanning lives and dies when going for the fourth down. I believe they were 5-for-7 in this game. Yeah. If you go 5-for-7 on fourth down, it takes the will out of defense. And Penn State's defense still played well. But at the end of the day, Drew Aller couldn't get it done. He can't get it done. And what hurts the most is you're watching Bo Prabula down at Missouri whip people's ass.
Yeah.
Whip people. And not just sitting in the pocket, extending plays, a legitimate dual threat. I've said this, and I've said this for a while now, and I catch hell. You're not going to win it with Drew Aller. You're just not. It's a Drew Aller and James Franklin problem. So if you're Penn State, they were screaming fire James Franklin in the second half. I'm not saying do that, but the fans were screaming it in the second half of that football game, which is crazy.
Penn State's tired of bringing home sixes.
If you would have told me, and I'm going to pull this stat up real quick because I saw it this morning and I bookmarked it because I'm a genius. One, if you'd have told me that this game would have been 3-3 at halftime, I'd have called you a liar. But James Franklin at Penn State, he's 1-15 versus top five opponents. He is 4-21 versus top 10 opponents. He is 15-for-30 versus top 25 opponents, and he's 4-17 versus Michigan and Ohio State. Sooner or later, You have to win some shit that matters. And James Franklin, it's been a while, hasn't done that.
David, I want to get to the Penn State part. I want to get to the Drew Aller part because a lot of what Blaine said I agree with. But I do got to make this point. You know, we always talk about which teams have that dog in them, which players have it in them. You know, I always joke about Auburn, and it comes true pretty much almost every week. Winners win and losers lose. And Dante Moore was fantastic in this game, especially, I mean, that one throw he made when he got flushed out to the right. I can't remember if it was on fourth down or not. I think it was on fourth down where he kind of threw back across his body.
Yeah, he got away with a hold.
Yeah, but I mean, look, there's holding every play. But I want to point something out. I don't know if a lot of people are going to know this. The leading rusher at Penn State last night for Oregon averaged 8.2 a carry, De'Aaron Hill Jr. Leading receiver last night, DeCorian Moore, averaged, I mean, dang near what, 15 yards a catch, whatever, seven catches for 89 yards, 13 and a half, something like that. What did both of those guys have in common? Freshmen. You had a young quarterback or a green quarterback, a freshman wide receiver, and a freshman running back were the ones that led you statistically. Hmm. They were your horses last night. It wasn't the older guys. So if I'm an Oregon fan, I'm excited as hell for the win, but I'm even more ecstatic for the future now. But another thing, and it's what I said all week, and you said it off the top, Blaine, could Oregon stop the run? Because I've watched them, and it's looked. I didn't think they looked great in the front seven defensively. Well, last night they stepped up and stopped it.
Yeah.
They stepped up and stopped it. And if they're able to do that with how good Dante Moore is playing and the athletes they have running around on offense, and you look at the landscape of college football, David Cohn, you can make a case for him to be number one right now, I think.
You can make a great case. Look, I went out on a limb preseason for James Franklin and this Penn State team. I said, look, I'm going to ride with this team to be my national championship pick because the floor is so high every year. This guy's winning 10 and 11 games every year. And with a returning roster like this, 2,000 yard backs, elite wide receivers, I like a lot of the players they have on defense. And you have an experienced quarterback returning who can make all the throws. Can he deliver in the big time situations? I said, I like this Penn State team for James Franklin to finally get over that hump. To me, you have to win this football game. When you have one of the top three, maybe top two home field advantages in the sport, 110,000 strong at night, I've played in that environment twice. It's so hard to go in there and get a win. And I'm watching, like you just said, freshmen be able to go in there and do it. I mean, what Dante Moore did last night, for people who've never played the game, it's like, I need you to just like understand going for 248 yards, three touchdowns, and no interceptions in that environment. It's like a video game almost what he was able to do. So I know Penn State may beat their chest and say, well, if that's the number one team in the country, we took them to overtime. Maybe we're the second best team in the country. Okay, well, maybe that's true. But I didn't see anything from Penn State last night that told me they're a serious contender for this league title or certainly the national title. Now, the flip side of that, you ask, how good is Oregon? I don't know. That was pretty impressive. But to me, what's most impressive is this guy, Dan Lanning, because no matter the environment, no matter what the style of game, that guy figures out a way to win. You want to have a shootout? He'll beat you 45-40. You want to have a low-scoring grind of a game? He can beat you like that. You want to play in Eugene? You want to play in front of 110,000 in Happy Valley? You want to play in a bowl game? This guy just finds a way to win games, and I think that they're going to be a serious threat here moving forward the rest of the season.
Well, you know, we say the best teams take on the identity and the attitude of their head coach. And I don't know if there's a better example of a team having no fear the way their head coach has no fear. I mean, you listen to Dan talk in the pregame. I mean, how he connects with these guys. It's borderline spiritual level when you're in that moment, right? Before going like in the visitor's locker room, about to run out at Penn State, when you're on the road in a whiteout, and you go out there and let them things hang as a freshman? I mean, that just – it takes God-given ability, but it takes a type of mental strength that I think is the cultural foundation of what Oregon football is becoming. It's no longer the, well, you know, it's really pretty, and we're going to wear highlighter colors and run around and score a lot of points. There is this physicality element that almost reminds me of the way Utah started ascending in the Pac-12. kind of separating themselves because they were one of the few tough-ass teams there, Blaine. But you watch Dan, and it is a laser focus and intensity, but more importantly, a confidence. And I think his guys feed off that.
Can I give you a specific example real quick to what Nick was saying? 10-3 at the beginning of the fourth quarter, fourth down and one. David Cone, head coach Cone, is kicking that field goal, right? Because you're up by a touchdown against a team that hasn't proven that they can move the football and score. I'm kicking that field goal to go up 13-3. Instead, Dan Lanning come back out of a break, goes for it on fourth and one, rushing touchdown to be able to go up 17-3. Well, Penn State ends up coming back. They force overtime. That matters. That decision matters. So it can, you could say that was the wrong decision, or maybe you should have kicked the field goal. Technically, that guy went for it and put six on the board.
Yeah, look, they scored. It was the right decision. That's the way I look at it. You know, you can look at the card all you want. What I like doing is look at what happens and then making my mind up whether it's a good decision.
That's
or
a good
not.
Way to do it. Yeah. You're always right then.
You're 100% hindsight. I mean, you're going to bat 1,000 on hindsight, but huge for Oregon. Blaine, you know, anything to add on there as we move forward?
Dan Lanning's going to be the guy to throw the first punch. All right,
for sure.
If you're in a fight, this felt like one of those games where, look, Penn State, if you hit them, look, they'll punch back, but they're going to wait for you to hit them.
Yeah.
Dan Lanning's not asking questions. He's just going to punch you in the face.
Yeah, he's just going to make sure it's the right person and then punch
you. You can tell that his players believe that. But now what you need to do is look at Oregon's schedule.
That's what I literally pulled up right here.
So now with that win, okay, you have Indiana at home, winnable after what I saw against Iowa, how Mendoza goes and takes that safety made me want to throw up. We'll talk about that on another day. You have Rutgers on the road, Wisconsin at home, at Iowa, Minnesota at home, USC at home, and at Washington. Oregon, congratulations. You're in the playoffs.
I agree.
In the playoffs.
Especially if you get past Indiana.
Go ahead.
Now Oregon and Miami have a real chance, which is so hard to do nowadays in college football. They have a real chance to go undefeated regular season.
Yeah, well, we're going to put
out
our Miami.
I did a year ago.
Yeah, we're going to put out our Miami-Florida State preview today as well, so make sure you're locked into that. We're going to obviously talk about what happened against Virginia, I'm sure, within that preview as well, so we didn't forget anything on a Friday night, including Arizona State with a nice win over TCU to keep advancing. TCU's still going to be fine. I mean, look, you know, you can say they blew it, this, that, or the other. Arizona State went and took it. I love Sam Levitt. Tried to make a case to get him to go to another school at the end of last year, but that didn't work out. But no, Blaine, you bring up Oregon's schedule. It's a really, really good point. You look at Penn State and what they have left. Now at 3-1, 0-1 in the Big Ten, you've got UCLA on the road. They're terrible. You've got Northwestern at home. You'll win that one. At Iowa, you should win that one. I'm definitely going to take the under. You go to Ohio State. Then you got Indiana at home, at Michigan State, Nebraska at home, at Rutgers. I mean,
not easy.
Not easy.
9-3 or 10-2.
I don't think with
a 9-3 Penn State doesn't get in.
I don't think they get in. I don't think a 9-3 Penn State gets in over, let's say, a 9-3 Texas or somebody with the schedule, or Oklahoma
think about it,
with a Mateer injury and stuff.
At that point, if it's even 9-3 or 10-2, we're talking about all conference losses because they already went undefeated in non-conference play, which means you're going to be boxed out from the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah. So that's outside looking in. But, you know, again, crazier things have happened. We'll see. Let the season play out. I tell you what, every game they're favored in, they'll probably win. So it's probably 10-2. It's Indiana at home. You'll probably be favored 2.5, whatever, maybe 1.5, something like that. Nobody can win a game they're favored like James Franklin. It's just at some point, Penn State's just tired of getting a rawhide wallet. Like, they want Hulk hands one time. I mean, just you're bringing home sixes. That's great, right? I mean, you sure it's fun, right? Technically, you scored, but it's not, you know, not the world you want to live in if you're Penn State. You view yourself how Penn State views themselves as what they believe is the elite of the elite in college football. And they just, man, is it a mental block, David? Like, at this point, we talk about teams taking on the personality of their head coach. Does, like, the team feel that? Like, oh, God, another big game against a quality opponent. Coach looks nervous. I mean, my high school baseball coach, we always knew it was a big game because he'd step outside the batting cage and smoke cigarettes, and we could smell it eventually. That's how he knew it was a big game. I mean,
I personally – I personally just think it's really good teams are hard to beat, so he's not beating that. And so, and you need those guys. Like, you need some guys who beat all the teams they're supposed to beat and who lose the games against the teams that are bad. It's hard to beat Jim Harbaugh. He was a great coach. Jim Harbaugh was beating him. It's hard to beat Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer was beat. Dan Lanning, great coach. And then, you know, you take care of business against the teams you're supposed to. It could be worse. But I think what Penn State fans are saying is it could also be better.
Yeah. Well, speaking about worse, is Sam Pittman still the head coach at Arkansas right now? I mean, this is, it's 8:30 in the morning on Sunday. Yeah. Do we still, is Bobby Petrino the interim yet? Because I'm going to be honest with you. And, you know, Travis Williams is a guy that I've known for a while. Obviously played at Auburn. You know, his name was really, really hot there for a minute. But what I saw against Notre Dame, and all credit to Jeremiah Love and CJ Carr and this, that, or the other, but that was one of the worst defensive performances I've ever seen in my life by what Arkansas put on the field yesterday. You gave up 42 points in the first half, and to be honest with you, Notre Dame could have scored 60. I think they could have scored 60 points in the first half. You know, Arkansas gets the ball, drives down, kicks a field goal, but it's not even just fundamental stuff that you're bad at. You also just have bad players, pretty much outside of a couple guys. I mean, Arkansas doesn't have SEC-level defensive players, and that's why I was so worried about them before the season. Not just the starters, Blaine, but the depth. I mean, Notre Dame, congrats to you, but is Sam going to make it through the week?
Look, it gets now we go back to this question every time when you talk about coaches like this. It comes down to a buyout. If you're Arkansas, at this point, I would just get my ass kicked for the rest of the year and then fire Sam Pittman and not have to pay his buyout, well, as much, right, at the end of the day. Because I don't care who you bring in there, right? Robert Downey Jr. from Sherlock Holmes, right? And he's not fixing this. You can bring in Iron Man. He's not fixing this. I mean, at the end of the day, and I'm not surprised by this. I don't know why people are surprised by this outcome at Arkansas. They've been terrible on defense the entire year. The entire year. You gave up 32 against Memphis. You gave up 41 against Ole Miss. This isn't surprising. The big thing for Arkansas now, it's not even about Sam Pittman to me. All right? He's gone. Love Coach Pitt. It just didn't work out. All right? How the hell can we keep Talen Green? How can we keep Talen Green at Arkansas? Look, I know he didn't have a great performance against Notre Dame, but he's a hell of a football player. And if you watch him play, I think you know that. It's just down. It's just going to be a rough year.
I mean, he's a senior, so he's gone. And you're talking about
he's a senior. Damn, I thought he was a junior. Okay.
Yeah, no. He's a senior. But I mean,
these days,
you want to talk about opt-outs.
He might play for 13 years. Yeah.
No, like, I mean, you want to talk about opt-outs. The sad part is it's a senior can.
But
you can
funny.
Ask that question.
It's just funny. Not even the Arkansas point on Notre Dame. They start whipping up on Arkansas, and you start to hear that chatter.
That's exactly what I was going to pivot to,
look,
David.
Look, if the offense keeps playing like this,
David, I heard it yesterday. I heard the broadcaster say it, and the minute he said it, I looked at Blaine and was like, you got to be kidding me.
Here we go.
It was, if Notre Dame keeps playing like this with the rest of their schedule, they're going to find themselves in the college football playoff. I'm not saying they should be like eliminated from the college football playoff already. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that. But, I mean, easy, my brother. Arkansas, again, and I got a lot of respect for Ryan Silverfield and Memphis, but they just lost to Memphis. You've beaten Purdue. And you beat Arkansas. You lost at home against A&M, who looked horrible offensively against Auburn. And you lost at Miami by 3. Admirable, this, that, and the other. But let's just slow our ass down a little bit on this. Oh, well, Notre Dame, let's just go ahead and pencil them in.
Well, look, Notre Dame lost in week 2 to Northern Illinois a year ago. And I said, there's no way you can make the college football playoff after losing to Northern Illinois. And not only did they do that, they made it to the national championship game. People forget from September to Selection Sunday. People really do forget. And I'll tell you what, That offense, man, CJ Carr is dialed in, dude. Yeah. What an incredible player, man. And Jeremiah Love coming into his own, the way that Love and Price have that 1-2 dynamic there. Obviously, we've loved the wide receiver group this whole offseason. The perplexing part was the defense. Well, I know one thing Arkansas can do is score a lot of points, and you held them to 13 points. So all credit to Notre Dame going on the road, getting a win like that. But I do want to update you guys on Sam Pittman's buyout since you brought it up, and this is from our buddy Pete Nakos over at On Three. Sam Pittman has one of the most unusual buyouts in college football. If he's 500 or above since 2021, it includes that 21 season, which he is. I think he's two games above 500. Mm-hmm. The Razorbacks would owe him roughly $9.8 million. If he were under 500, the buyout would be roughly $6.9
million. All right, you said he's like two games above, is
I
what
think
you said?
So.
All right, so let's look at the schedule. I know they go to Tennessee next.
Yeah, I got it right here. Yeah, you're on the road at Tennessee.
Okay.
You have A&M at home. You got Auburn at home.
Uh-oh.
There you go. You got Mississippi State at home. You're on the road at LSU, on the road at Texas, and you got Missouri at home.
So if you're Arkansas's AD, you're actively rooting against them right now, right? Actively rooting against them.
I mean,
lose the next three, and then we'll fire him. He'll be under.
What's the number? Do we know the number? Did you say the number, Dave, for the
I think
buyout?
The first one was nine.
The first one's 9.8. The second one is roughly 6.9. Again, this is coming from Nakos.
Look, man, we got Tyson's Nuggets.
Yeah,
Walmart. Why are we like $9 million? Worried about that.
A difference of $3 million. The real question isn't, is Sam going to come back or not?
It's higher.
Is it Petrino? Could we have the first ever coach getting fired from a school? And you remember the neck brace that he wore after that whole thing with the ball? Can you imagine if I told you they'd be begging Bobby Petrino to take the job? Like the second time. That would be hilarious to me.
Who's going to call Gruden? Who's going to call him?
I don't think Gruden's going to Arkansas.
Why not?
I think he'd go to Florida. Or somewhere like that. I think no offense to Arkansas, but I don't know if they're on the list in the top drawer there. That was a nice win for Notre Dame. We'll see how they kind of navigate the rest of their schedule as well. It's going to be interesting. Going back just to some of the other, Tennessee survives Mississippi State. Mississippi State, quality club.
Ranked. Should be
quality
ranked.
Club.
Should Man. Be ranked.
I mean,
and that's another.
You're Arizona State. You're saying, see, they are good.
Yeah,
look, and yeah. I don't want to upset our Mississippi State fan base, but if Mississippi State stays on this track and they win some games they're not supposed to and keep playing like this, people are going to be gunning for Jeff Lebby.
Oh, for sure.
I promise you that they're going to try to poach Jeff Lebby away from Mississippi State, because at the end of the day, if he can do anything, he can figure an offense out. Right, he can get your offense going, and I think he right now the strides that Mississippi State's taken in the second year of Jeff Lebby needs to be noticed, and they need to be a ranked football team.
You can see them, like you can see them right in front of you, like the program elevating. But I mean, again, if you're Tennessee,
that was good for Tennessee.
It's a road win.
That was good for Tennessee to get tested on the road like that, have to come from behind, be able to do it. Because again, I still think they're going to be in that college football playoff conversation.
Sure.
What a great game to snap you awake a little bit and say, hey, that was a good football team that we beat. No one's going to give us the credit nationally, but we in the locker room understand what a great win that was. Let's go home and regroup for the next week.
And I think it also showed you can win a game where Aguilar isn't on his A game. I mean, he threw for 335 yards, but he was 24-40, one touchdown, two interceptions. So you're able to win a game in which Joey Aguilar kind of shows us a couple of those flashes of what concerned some people before the season about the turnover bug, because he's just been fantastic the whole time he's been at Tennessee. I mean, he was good in this one. I wouldn't say it was great. I think Tennessee fans would agree with me there, but they survived. Georgia Tech survives wow. against Wake Forest. And you say, oh, well, why would you talk about Georgia Tech and Wake Forest? Well, Florida State lost to Virginia. So there is now a track, a very, 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 very good-looking track for Georgia Tech. Yes, Georgia Tech to be playing in the ACC championship game. Guys, you got Virginia Tech at home, at Duke, Syracuse at home, at NC State, at Boston College, Pitt at home, and then Georgia at home. Like, I mean, could Georgia Tech have a playoff spot locked up?
Not locked up, but I mean, the question is how much can Haynes King sustain? Like, can he survive the entire season? And Georgia Tech, Duke, I mean, the Haynes King, Darian Mensa matchup, the way Mensa's been playing, I mean, he's playing like a guy who commanded all that NIL money. And then you brought up Pitt. I mean, Pitt Louisville delivered. I mean, that was a heck of a game to watch yesterday.
Yeah, well, I mean, I keep saying Haynes King is the Nate Diaz of college football. Like, I just watch him. I'm like, how is this guy's body still working?
Can we talk about Florida State for a second? Because we haven't gotten a chance to talk about them, but we watched this game together on Friday night. It looked to me like a team that was told how good they were for the entire month of September. I mean, I'd like your guys' take on it, but on both sides of the football, on defense, like bad angles, poor tackling, missed assignments, and then on the offensive side, Thomas Castellanos turning the football over in a way that we saw him do at Boston College, which led him to getting benched. Didn't see that in the opener against Alabama and haven't seen them tested since then, and now they have a road loss.
Yeah, well, you know, to your point, I think the defense was definitely reading the press clippings. That's what shocked me the most. You know, I got a lot of respect for Chandler Morris, and you know, I think Jamari Taylor is a good back, but I don't think that offensive line should have been able to do to Florida State what they were able to do. I mean, Chandler Morris turned the ball over three times as well, right? So it wasn't like Virginia just put this immaculate game together and it was just everything that had to happen happened. That first quarter, and really that first half, or really the first quarter and a half, Florida State was moving the ball with ease, But they would keep turning it over, the old bend but don't break, and it made Virginia start to believe. And Virginia goes up 7-0. Florida State's driving the ball down. They try and run a little slip screen. It gets tipped. It gets intercepted like at the 10 or the 12. And then all of a sudden, it turned into a scoring fest in that second quarter where you had 35 total points. You had 42 total at halftime. It was going back and forth. And then it was tied in the third. They were 7-7. Not the score, but just who scored. Tied in the fourth, 7-7. And Virginia wins in overtime. They're able to get that stop at the end. I saw people blaming Gus Malzahn. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you blame the offense for Florida State losing this game, I think you should be federally investigated by the FBI. I've seen bad Gus Malzahn offenses. Okay. You hadn't been in the trenches of the Coxcat. All right. You haven't seen, like, come complain to me when you score 6 points and you got guys, H-backs, doing pirouettes in the backfield and throwing the ball down 21 for an interception against Bama. Yeah. I mean, but again, the turnovers, the timing of the turnovers, and it's that defense. That's what shocked me, Blaine. That's what shocked me.
Yeah, it's one, it just makes me think, what the hell was Alabama doing for four quarters in this football game from an offensive standpoint, the way they played against Georgia? I'll have no idea. And the second thing here is I saw the spread came out. I think it was at 9.5. And I looked at it. I was like, what is going on? I've watched Virginia play. I watched them play against NC State. Chandler Morris is a good player. They have two good backs. But their defense was just atrocious. And I thought Florida State's defense were better than what they were. They got their ass kicked in the front seven. They got their ass kicked. And Virginia kept going to it. And I promise you, we're going to put a preview out later. The things they're about to play next weekend – yeah. On the offensive line, to turn around and hand the ball to Mark Fletcher, you better figure it out quick. I know this was a short week. And for all the people that are saying, well, you know, maybe Florida State was looking ahead at Miami. You won two games last year.
Didn't you have a bye week the week before this?
How do you look past anybody? Anybody at all? So I'm not buying that excuse. Virginia just beat you, right? Virginia was just a better team. On this Friday, they just beat you. And now you're going to have to rally because there's nothing wrong with the offense, right? One, I don't think that was a catch in the end zone.
It wasn't a catch.
I don't think that guy's a hell of a player, but that wasn't a catch. Yeah. And you had your opportunities to put this game away. Tommy Castellanos did not play great, but I thought he played okay. He played good enough on offense to win this football game, but it comes down to the same thing. The defense just let you down. And now you have to figure out that front seven because you have Miami next week at home. And trust me, they're going to test you early.
Florida State's got reverse Auburn disease. The offense is really good, but the defense looked terrible. I do, guys, we are going to put out that Miami Florida State preview. Like I said, we've done a full Alabama Georgia reaction, a full Texas A&M Auburn reaction. Those are separate videos. We're going to talk about here a little bit in a second. But make sure if you haven't, if you want to deep dive on that, we did it, stayed up, basically all night last night. Well, I mean, watching fantastic games. It's not like we were, you know, in the trenches of World War One, just waiting to see a, you know, sparkler go above our head so we can run out. But I do. I want to give some love to Illinois. I want to give some love to Illinois. You got sauteed, slapped, smoked, shattered by Indiana, stupefied, 63-10. But this is why when you get your ass beat like that, I always love being able to play somebody that's good the next week so you can actually have a chance to feel good again, right? It's not like you're going to like play an Alabama A&M, like you're going to murder them anyway, and you may feel a little good, but deep down you know that they're not very good. You got USC undefeated, 4-0, 2-0 in the Big Ten already, coming to your crib, right, after that 63-10 loss. And I thought Maiva played pretty good for USC.
He did.
I mean, 30 of 43. 364 yards, two touchdowns, a pick. He's not the most fleet of foot, but he's kind of just got enough get up and go to make that zone read. You have to honor it. I mean, Waymon Jordan, 94 yards on 20 carries, two touchdowns. Lemon was incredible, including at the end. You knew who they were going to. It didn't matter if he was covered or not. But Luke Altmyer, when you had to have it, the veteran, efficient, David, 20 of 26. 328 yards, two touchdowns. Then you look at the run game from Illinois. Nobody had more than 60 yards, but damn it, it worked. You had 34 carries for 172 yards. You know, Fagan was your leading rusher with 60. This was just a who's getting the ball last, and it happened to be Illinois. But I've heard some USC fans not really thrilled with the clock management by Lincoln Riley at the end of the game.
Well, I came away impressed by both teams, actually, because I wanted to see Jaden Maiva in this sort of environment. And that Mekhi Lemon kid, I mean, put the football anywhere near him and he's coming down with it. To be honest, they scored too quickly at the end. But look, you score to take the lead whenever you can. The reason I was impressed with both teams is because, one, on the Illinois side, like you said, you didn't just lose to Indiana. I mean, 63-10 is kind of in a different ball club of losing a game, right? Like you got embarrassed to be able to respond like that. And then on the USC side, to go across the country, play the way they did, I think they're going to win a lot of football games this season. But it was that game-winning drive at the end for Illinois to figure out a way to get into field goal range and to punch it through. What a victory for them.
Blaine, you know, you look at Illinois and as upset as people were, you look now, that win at Duke starting to look better and better. Sure. Second week of the season, 45-19. You beat a ranked USC team at home. You go on the road to play a Purdue team that you should beat. And then you get Ohio State at home. So, you know, these next 3 weeks, and you go to Washington. I know the loss to Indiana hurt, but you had to have this one, if we're being honest. You had to win this game.
Yeah, and this is why having Brett Bielema as your coach is so important, I think, if you're Illinois. Even getting drummed by Indiana the way you did, he's going to get you prepared. He's going to get this team ready. Mm-hmm. And you saw that. And I think Illinois is a legitimate problem, but it goes to the other side to me. At some point, the Lincoln Riley experiment's just not working. It's just not working. Some guys are offensive coordinators and some guys are head coaches. When's the last time Lincoln Riley had a defense that was worth anything?
Yeah. I mean,
that was worth anything. Sooner or later, I mean, year in and year out, you're averaging giving up 35 points a game. Like, it's fantastic. You can find a quarterback. You can put up points on offense. That's great. But as a head coach, it's a collective thing. And I'm sure Oklahoma fans will tell you. And I'm sure USC fans will tell you that it's just not good enough. It's just not good enough that their defense never shows up in big games. Go be a coordinator in the league. You get paid great money. You have the offense figured out. But it just begs the question, right? At what point can Lincoln Riley ever put a defense on the field that's worth anything?
Well, it's the physicality element to me defensively that is they've got DBs. Like, USC's got guys that can run. But it's that defensive line, it's that front seven, and it's the depth of it. And guess what? It's not about to get any easier.
No.
Because you get a bye week, and then you got Michigan coming to town. Yeah. And they want to line up and run it, especially if Biff Pogge's not coaching. If Sherrone Moore's coaching, they're going to line up and run it. If it's Biff, may spread it out a little bit more. Then you got to go to Notre Dame. Let me give you a hint. They're going to hand the ball off to Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love. Then you go to Nebraska. Not a walk in the park. Northwestern at home, Iowa at home, at Oregon. So if you're USC, I mean, you split Michigan and at Notre Dame, I think you end up 9-3 and missing it. You're not going to be in the Big Ten championship game, but Cone, to Blaine's point, he's right. Like, yeah. At what point? I actually think that Lincoln Riley would have more success as a head coach in the NFL than I think he could be a head coach in the NFL because it's so different the way the teams are structured and you know, the relationships with the players. You've kind of seen Kingsbury. You know, I know he's a coordinator, but it worked for him. It's the same problem.
If he went to coach an NFL team, he'd probably be coaching one of the guys he coached in college. Cause I feel like a third of the league are former Lincoln Riley quarterbacks who won Heisman trophies, which like there's something to be said for that, man. You know, like you recruited him, you coached him, you developed him, you know, does that make you a coordinator rather than a head coach? I don't know, but you just can't be this bad on defense at a program where I've seen it done at the highest level. Yeah. Played against Brian Cushion, Troy Polamalu defenses. Like I've seen it done at USC where you have dogs running around and you're imposing your physicality on other teams. But here's the question. How does this team respond? Because in our preseason predictions, I had USC starting 4-0. They did that. And then that four-game stretch that you mentioned, Illinois, Michigan, Notre Dame, Nebraska, I had them going 0-4 in that stretch, which puts you at 500 on the year. Is that who you are, USC? Or can you respond from this, beat Michigan at home, maybe go on the road, find a way to beat Notre Dame, and then you're very much in the college football playoff conversation?
No doubt. Again, that's why where we're at in the season, you know, you still most teams control their own destiny. I do just want a quick rewind on Alabama, Georgia, and Auburn, A&M. But first, I've got to give a shout out to BYU, and I know it hasn't been against the best competition. You know, you beat Portland State, you beat Stanford. A road win at ECU. You beat Colorado on the road after losing Retzlaff with all that. You are undefeated. You are 4-0. You get a West Virginia team at home that I think you should beat. I think at Arizona is winnable. And then Utah handled business yesterday against West Virginia. You got to play them at home because you got this stretch. Listen to this stretch, guys, the back end of the Big 12 here. Utah at home, at Iowa State, at Texas Tech, TCU at home, at Cincinnati, who just beat Kansas on the road. That is, we're going to find out everything we need to find out about BYU really here over the next 6 weeks, but especially once they go on the road to Arizona and then play Utah. But I wanted to make sure and give a shout out to BYU, Bachmeyer leading them back in a big win over Colorado. And it's amazing. I haven't heard a word about Deion Sanders. I ain't heard a word about him. Blaine, I'm not a Deion hater. I'm not a prime, you know, time hater. But you look at Colorado without Travis, without Shadur, you lose to Georgia Tech, lose to Houston, lose to BYU. Congrats, you go to TCU. You're probably going to lose that. Iowa State at home, probably going to lose that. Utah on the road, probably going to lose that. Looks like you're about to stare 2-5 in the face. And you end with Arizona State and at Kansas State. I don't know. I don't know when it comes to prime in Colorado and how they're going to make it back there. But I do. And David, I want to, after sleeping on it again, we did the full Alabama, Georgia recap and reaction. You can find that on our channel. Make sure you check that out
quickly. Before we get to that, I want to make sure we talk about those Ohio State Buckeyes.
Okay. Right? Yeah.
Very important. A lot of people had money on Washington in this game. I heard a lot of Washington talk, this and that. I don't think Ohio State blew anybody out of the water, especially with their offensive performance, but just finding a way to win games. Finding a way to win games. That's what Ohio State does. Good for Ryan Day. Good win. ended up covering 24-6, and that defense is legitimate.
The defense is.
I was impressed
the best
with Washington's defense.
True. Yeah,
I was impressed with Washington's defense.
That's what shocked me,
early.
David.
But here's another thing you have to understand with the Buckeyes. They're going to get everyone's best shot.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the way across the country at a really cool environment. I mean, again, I wasn't surprised or knocking the Buckeyes that that game was close early. What was the spread, Blaine? 8.5 or
eight
something
and
like
eight
that?
And a half, yeah.
So to go on and win the football game like they did, I mean, that's they're probably the best team in the country right now.
Yeah. It's again, what makes it fun is we could throw five or six teams in there right now that I think you could really make a case for as number one, but watching and look, Washington, Jonah Coleman's a hell of a back. Denzel Boston's a hell of a receiver. I thought Damon Williams wasn't bad yesterday. It's just Ohio State is that good. Ohio State's going to do that to a lot of teams. You know, and Saiyan's going to continue to develop and grow. And it's nice to continue to develop and grow when you have the pieces around him, not only on the offensive side, but then a defense you can rely on as well. So you don't have to be crazy. So a really nice road win for Ohio State. Ho-hum, right? Ho-hum. We'll see. We'll see, you know, how Washington's able to bounce back, because they got to go, I believe, to Maryland next. And that's a game. Remember, I had Washington 10-2 guys making the playoff, but losing back-to-back games against Ohio State and Maryland and then winning out. So we'll see if that comes to fruition. But I do, David, after sleeping on it, Alabama beats Georgia. Again, we did the whole recap you can catch on our channel. But just, you know, anything that you know, maybe you didn't say yesterday or woke up this morning and we're feeling different about, like, where do you stand on it as we sit here Sunday morning?
No, I thought those were two really good football teams that played an awesome game. And I think both are going to be in contention, not just for the league championship, but also for a national championship. Who would want to line up right this second and play either one of those teams? And they did it in different ways. I'd like to see Alabama be able to turn around and hand the football off and be able to close out games that way. Instead, it was actually putting the football on Ty Simpson. Hand saying, hey, you need to make plays down the stretch, and he did, including the very last play to put it away where they could actually go forward and kneel it out. Just what a cool play design, and one of the few times that I've seen Kirby Smart get out coached in some situations. But on the Georgia side of things, one, Gunnar Stockton has proven that he is not some weak link. He can make plays for you when it matters most, and they still ran for over, what, 220 yards on this Alabama defense, and that was the defense that got Tim Keenan back, which really helped them a lot up front. So I'm not panicking on either one of these teams. They played a great football game. Someone had to win, someone had to lose, and I think that they're going to be right there in contention throughout the season.
Yeah, you know, it's again, and I said it during the week, Blaine, like watching both of these defensive lines, it just it's not the normal dominant, because remember, it was Bama just dominant on the defensive line. Just dominated college football while Saban was there. Then Saban, then, you know, Kirby goes to Georgia. It kind of yo-yoed back and forth. Saban leaves. Then Georgia was just playing in everybody's backfield. And it's not just this game. I mean, go back and look at the Tennessee game. And I know, look, Jim Miller had, what, 50 yards on 16 carries. Bama ran for 117 yards on 38 carries. But it's not just stopping the run. It's the pass rush, too. And I look at Georgia, and it just, they don't look the same. I mean, they got to tie a couple times to move them, but you only got one sack. And I'm just, the chaos that Georgia typically creates up front, you're just not seeing it. And I think that's what started giving Ty Simpson and Ryan Grubb as a play caller some confidence. Like, hey, we have time to go through our reads. We have time to be balanced, this, that, and the other. We're not getting overwhelmed by monsters that Georgia typically has. Like we saw the one Jordan Davis that blocked the field goal, and he's the size of a school bus running the other way for the Eagles to beat the Rams. Like they don't have that this year.
No, and it's just so weird to see. I mean, they don't even have that guy, right? It's different having two or three, but they only have the one. Which is just, you know, you're not used to seeing that with the Georgia coach football team. But I will say this. I mean, this was the Alabama offensive line I expected coming into the year.
Yeah.
Right? With the talent that they have, that they brought back, the NFL picks, the Caden Proctors, and all these guys. Ty Simpson could have wrote a book back there if he wanted to. And I thought Ryan Grubb did a fantastic job making it simple for Ty Simpson, not overcomplicating things. And I want to say this, too. Getting Jam Miller back – not only just in the run game, just in the philosophy of their offense, when it comes to pass pro, when it comes to just doing what needs to be hit, getting him and Tim Keenan back were huge. And you could tell in this football game. So Alabama getting healthy, Ty Simpson. Yeah. Why can't Kirby Smart beat Kalen DeBoer?
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. I mean, we're sitting here talking about the defense. They did shut Alabama out in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the problem was you gave up 24 and you gave up that last drive before the first half. But I want to bring this point up. A lot of Alabama fans, people across the country, like, why the hell is Alabama so, from a play calling standpoint against Florida State, you have a 17-play drive to start off the season. You look great, running it down their throat. Then you kind of abandon the run game, right? You start throwing it. Then you start looking at news out of Seattle. Why was Ryan Grubb fired? He wouldn't run the ball, this, that, or the other. Against Georgia yesterday, you threw it 39 times. You ran it 38 times. Balance. Damn, that's balance if I've ever seen it, bud. That's about as balanced as it gets.
And it's not only players. Like, it's not only players figuring out as you go. Coaches are figuring it out, too.
Yeah,
you go. They're finding their identity. They're finding their balance. And I think Ryan
and their attitude. Like, that's the biggest thing. Like, the stuff that we were seeing in Tallahassee in week one was just, to me, it was unacceptable. I think people voiced their concerns that it was unacceptable. And I'll be honest with you, I think the coaching staff heard a lot of that. Not that they're trying any harder. Not that they, you know, already were, you know, lackadaisical when it came to meetings or whatever culture inside the building. But I sense that coaching staff felt and understood a lot of that criticism and that those issues have been addressed in that building.
Yeah, there weren't any effort problems in that Georgia game.
No.
That's a game where if Georgia wins that at the very end and we're sitting here this morning talking about Alabama losing, I would still feel just as confident moving forward about the Alabama team because of the way they would have lost.
Yeah, what did you think about the fourth down call to Cass Jones, David? What did you think?
Well, again, like I told you yesterday, I'm kicking that field goal, but that's a situation where we talked about Dan Lanning in Oregon. I would have kicked that one as well, and Oregon rushes a touchdown. I'll tell you which one perplexed me more was Bama's fourth down. I have it in my notes here. Bama fourth down call, what is that? Five exclamation marks. No one went out in a route. He clearly turned around to hand the football off. Was it supposed to be a design quarterback run following the back? We watched it four times and couldn't figure out what was going on that. But, hey, that's the kind of thing. Alabama beat Georgia in Athens and didn't play a perfect game.
Yeah, and responded to adversity, which, again, real quick, our Auburn A&M reaction, you can catch that. But speaking about adversity, it's all we know as Auburn fans. Blaine, just anything, I woke up this morning and thought maybe it could be Saturday. But it turns out it's not.
It's not. I think Hugh Freeze is just Billy Napier without DJ Lagway, to be honest. And I think you're seeing that now. And I think at this point, the only thing that can really save Hugh Freeze is if you play Deuce Knight. I think you have to play Deuce Knight, and maybe he can come in and
against Georgia.
I mean, shit don't matter. I mean, you gonna throw Jackson out there?
I want Jackson out there
so I can watch his ass sit in the pocket for 7 seconds, get sacked, miss wide open receivers. Why wouldn't you play Deuce?
Maybe he'll run the ball. Maybe Hugh will call
good reason. Why you wouldn't play Deuce Knight?
I watched him play. I forgot who was out there against. It wasn't South Alabama. I think it was Ball State. And Ball State looked too fast for him. If that looked too fast for him, the things Georgia will do to you. It's the exact same thing. You know, if it was different, if crazy fluke things were just happening all the time and you were losing in a different way, okay? You know, I can understand it, but I almost want to play the clips of Hugh Freeze at these press conferences at the end of games. He says the same things, which to me is insane. Mess up the other way. It's like if I'm hitting the ball right off the tee, sometimes I'll just go, hey, miss it left. I'm going to go up here and miss it left. We should have ran the ball more. Well, duh. That was your biggest advantage against A&M was your ability to what you thought to run the ball. And you didn't do it, but it's we broke that all down, David. It's just wow, it's so bad in year three, and you brought in another rescue. It turns out there's a reason the previous owner sent him back, right? He has rabies and he hates kids. Like it just
you guys said a lot of harsh truths yesterday that I think resonated with Auburn fans. Again, I'll say those were your two toughest road tests of the year, and you lost them by a combined 13 points. And so now my question is, does this team have more quit in them, or does this team have more perseverance in them? because Georgia and Alabama, who are both on your schedule, who you both get in Jordan Hare, those teams aren't going anywhere. They're building up momentum as we speak.
The worry with me when it comes to the players is that when they see something that's glaringly, obviously bad, they're going to point it out, right? They're going to know it. If you're a defense, you know when your offense can't score.
Yeah.
You know when your quarterback's
a terrible feeling.
And that starts to bleed into that locker room. Can Hugh Freeze control that?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Blaine, because it's that's been in that situation. It is not a fun situation to be in. But any other games before we get done here? Again, we're going to put out a Miami Florida State preview today. We got a couple reactions.
Louisville coming from 17-0 down to beat Pitt. I mean, they stay undefeated in the ACC. Great win for them.
Yep, you know, Miller did his thing, and it was ugly. He threw a pick six early. Blaine, anything on the periphery? I mean, Vandy handled Utah State. That was the easiest over bet of the weekend.
Yeah, I would say great win for Arizona State.
Yeah.
Fantastic win. I thought TCU was a damn good football team. Well, Arizona State really stood up on defense, and Sam Levitt starting to turn into the same Sam Levitt I expected when the season started.
Well, you've now beaten Baylor and TCU.
Do we have Tim Brando on tomorrow?
We got Tim Brando on Tuesday.
Tim Brando on Tuesday, who's called the last two Arizona State games. So I'm really excited to ask him about seeing this Arizona State team 2 weeks in person after wins over not just TCU, but also Baylor. Those are two huge wins to me. So I'm excited to get Tim's input on the Big 12 right now.
Definitely. We want your input in the comments. Remember, if you're not subbed, go ahead and do that. We got a great week of content coming. We got power rankings tomorrow. Make sure you check out all the reactions that we've thrown out there. Remember, without you, there is no us. Gentlemen, have a great Sunday. Don't watch the Ryder Cup. It's not good. Not a good situation out there.
Apparently, there's already an NFL game on, and I didn't know this.
Yeah. But all right, we appreciate you guys. Make sure you hit that like button. We'll see you soon.